Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's the Football Hour with Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen. Wrapping up the week that was with sound from the locker room, highlights from the game, and much more. And now, here's Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen.
Welcome in. No Kyle Madsen today. It's Mark Grandy and Sterling Bennett with you, coming to you a special edition of the Football Hour on a Friday. That's because the Niners, of course, in action on Thursday night this week, which means we got to get the Football Hour in the day after games, and that is today, a Friday evening here on 95.7 The Game. Welcome in. Wish it was under better circumstances. The 49ers lose at home last night to the Rams, 12-6. Their season essentially over at this point, and it will take you up until 7 o'clock, breaking down every angle of this game. Sterling, you and I, along with Kyle, were on overtime last night for 3 hours. We broke down a lot of this football game. We spent a lot of time on Devondre Campbell. I'm sure we'll spend a little bit more time on him tonight as well. But one thing that I want to make sure that we do not do, you and I, and Niner fans in general, and everybody who's talking about the Niners, I just want to make sure that the Devondre Campbell situation, and if you happen to miss it, he essentially quit on this team, refused to go in when the Niners needed him to in the game last night, walked off the field, and we don't exactly know where he is at this point. He's still officially on the team. The Niners have not cut him or released him, but he will not be playing another snap for the 49ers for the rest of his career. I just don't want that situation, as shocking and as bad as it is, Sterling. I don't want that to distract from what was another terrible 49ers performance on the football field. The defense, for the most part, was very, very good, but the offense and the general preparedness and some of the decision-making and all of that, it was really, really bad. And the Devondre Campbell situation is entirely separate, but that does not mean what the Niners put out there on the tape last night gets a pass, because it was a terrible, terrible performance in a game that you absolutely had to have. And the offense put together their worst game of the season.
And it wasn't just, oh, special teams disaster, cost them late, which has been a common occurrence through many of their losses this year. It was, oh no, Brock Purdy's terrible. Brock Purdy puts together maybe the worst performance of his entire career in the biggest game thus far this season. Deebo Samuel looks like a shell of himself for like the 13th time this year. I think he really hasn't had a great game since week one. Maybe if you want to give him credit for that Seattle Seahawks win on Thursday Night Football earlier in the season, okay, fine. But just a overall poor performance from a team that has still, despite the injuries, so many stars that should be able to carry them in a game against the Rams, where the defense only gives up 12 points. Like, I know Devondre Campbell's a hot topic, and we talked about it for a long time last night, and rightfully so. This team just played so bad. It was like, let's not talk about how bad they are, because it's so hard to even, I guess, face the music and say, wow, the 2024 San Francisco 49ers are under 500. They may finish under 500. They aren't a good team. And, you know, we're going to be talking about Brock Purdy's contract and draft pick compensation or who they'll pick in the first round rather than playoff football in December and January. Yeah. That does not feel common. It doesn't feel good either. Like, I'm sad. Like, my entire life revolves around this team, and I'm like, I don't know what to do when they're not on the TV in a month's time. I feel lost, Mark. Lost right now.
Yeah, like, if we thought last offseason felt long, and it felt so long.
Yes.
It was actually one of the shortest off seasons you could ever possibly have because you played all the way into February in the Super Bowl. The only way it's shorter is, unfortunately, if you win the Super Bowl and you play on the Thursday night to open the next regular season instead of on the normal Sunday, or in the Niners' case, the Monday night football week one. But you had a short off season last year, and it felt long because of all the drama with Ayuk and McCaffrey and Trenton and all that, and we don't need to relitigate everything that happened there. But if you thought last off season was long, Sterling, this offseason is going to feel like twice as long. Not only because you have another contract decision looming over your head with Brock Purdy and other difficult decisions to make with some other pricey veterans that you might think about cutting or moving on from or try to trade and all of that, but also because the season is going to be over right essentially as the calendar turns to the new year, and you're going to have like 8-9 months of offseason to try to get ready for the next season again. That's going to take a really, really long time. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be difficult to work through. And the conversations that we're already beginning to have, oh my God, by the time April comes around and we get to the draft, it's going to feel like we've been beating a dead horse for months. So this offseason is going to feel terribly long. And what the Niners did last night was ensure that that is what's going to happen, because they had an opportunity. I mean, I didn't really want to let myself believe that much, but after the Bears game, and then after the news that you're going to get Dre Greenlaw back and Nick Bosa returned, I kind of allowed myself to dream a little bit, Sterling. Yep. And I made a promise to myself I would not do that, but it was hard to not feel at least a little bit optimistic. But then the Niners reminded us who they have been all season long, and flatly, it's just not a good football team.
No, they are not good at all, whatsoever. And it's unfortunate because they really haven't been able to play, cohesive football all year long. And last night, two of their units that have been pretty bad in crunch time or pretty bad on third downs in the red zone came to play. The defense was tremendous last night. Dre Greenlaw's impact cannot be understated. It was just flying around, making plays, electro-tackling, great run defense. Yeah. This team could have had four interceptions last night if the ball bounced their way. They were holding
they
a really
just
good
catch.
Offense. I mean, yeah.
Diamador Lenore and Telenoa Hufanga each dropped interceptions in the first quarter.
And it wasn't even because of Hufanga's gigantic club
just
on his head.
Hit him in the chest.
And it's like, oh, that's how this game's going to go. Yep. And then you sit back and you're like, well, that's kind of how the entire season has gone. They're just not good enough at like one or two plays that change the outcome. And I'm sure the entire station today has talked about Brock Purdy's errant throw to Juwan Jennings. Yep. And the errant throw to Ricky Pearsall. Like, last night's game and the entire San Francisco season can really be a misplayage of certain throws, of certain runs. The games don't come down to a full quarter or two quarters of play. It comes down to one or two plays every single week that have unfortunately kind of doomed their season. And last night was no different. Brock Purdy looked the worst he ever has in his entire career. And I know there's quarterback contract talks and whatnot, but just focusing on last night, I mean, he looked like a quarterback that didn't know where to go with the football, a quarterback that couldn't throw the football when he knew where he wanted to go with it, And it just felt like that's not Brock Purdy. That's not the quarterback we've grown to know. And it's sad. Like, it's disheartening to know that this team has the potential to be a near Super Bowl champion and even with the injuries be a playoff team, but has not lived up to the own expectations set by themselves and by the fan base. And it's leading into one of the most, I don't want to say grueling, but one of the most, like, you got to figure this thing out in the offseason. You got to be desperate in the offseason, and I hope they can turn it around.
Yeah, you have question marks all over the place, and there's going to be so many questions and so many things worth discussing for the Niners in the coming offseason. You brought up Brock Purdy, and last night, not that I believed it, I didn't, but I tried to like play devil's advocate and make the case for, well, you know, Brock had this and this and this going against him. You know, you're down.
You want to pay him $70 million, Mark. Don't worry.
Yeah, I do.
Pay it's him. Not your money. Do what you want.
Give him a blank check. He can fill in the the money part of the check. But, like, I mean, yeah, he was down to his fourth-string running back, and you don't have Trent Williams, and Ayuk, of course, has been gone, and the offensive line, even when healthy, is not a strength of this team, and all those things. And then you factor in, well, it was wet, and Purdy has struggled at times in the rain, and that's certainly fair, but, you know, I know you and I both were not at the game. I was doing the show from our studios here in downtown San Francisco. You were doing the show from your home studio, and so we didn't have the ability to be there at Levi's, but chatting with people here at the station who were at the game, it rained kind of heavily for a decent chunk of the second quarter, but aside from that, it really wasn't that wet, and the conditions weren't that bad. So as far as I'm concerned, the rain, not really much of a factor in this football game. And I don't want to get into, you know, the potential contract and all of that. That's a conversation, again, that we'll have so much time for in the offseason. But there's no doubt that this was a very, very bad Brock Purdy game. I mean, even the interception aside, there were so many other misses. There were off throws. He was looking for Deebo Samuel over the middle. One of the few times Deebo Samuel found himself open, and he threw it, like, I don't know, 5 feet over his head. Lucky it wasn't intercepted. There were some throws that were behind his receivers that maybe the receiver still could have caught, or maybe they were a little bit low that they could have caught, but they didn't haul in. Part of that is on the receiver, but also part of it is on Brock Purdy for not putting it in a better spot. You referenced the deep ball to Ricky Pearsall, which was just before the interception to Juwan Jennings. I view the Juwan Jennings interception as more of a failure of, like, mental and decision making, and that's okay. That's a problem, but that's generally where Brock has been very good, and I'm not too worried about that. But what concerns me, Sterling, about Brock Purdy and what I saw last night and what we've seen at times this year, again, isn't like the mental side of things. It is the physical side of things. And wide open, down the middle part of the field, in the fourth quarter, in a drive where you need points and a touchdown might win you the game, you have Ricky Pearsall open, and you just can't get it out there enough. I don't know if it's an arm strength thing. I don't know if it's just him not exactly reading where the receiver is going. Whatever the case is, he's not making those throws down the field. Last night on throws 20 or more yards downfield, Sterling, 0 for 7 with an interception was Brock Purdy. He hits Ricky Pearsall in stride. It's a touchdown. He maybe not in stride, but still enough to allow him to catch the ball. The Niners are down inside the red zone. Maybe they score a touchdown. At the worst, they get a field goal, and they tie the game in the fourth quarter. There was another one, another time where Deebo had a step on a man. Purdy threw it too short. It didn't get enough oomph behind it, not enough juice. And we're getting to a point where I seriously have to question whether or not Brock Purdy's arm strength is enough to be able to make all of the throws on the field. And last year, it wasn't really a major concern, partly because he was making those throws more often, which is what makes this year so frustrating, but also because the Niners were able to get everything they wanted on the shallow routes that went for big gains, and they're not getting it this year. So I think what we're seeing, if we can try to narrow it down to like one overall issue, and this is the issue that teams run into when you pay the quarterback major money, is he good enough to still run the offense efficiently when not everything else around him is perfect, right? When there are issues, can he elevate everybody else? And if we use this season as an example, it seems that at the very least there are major questions to the level with which Brock Purdy can elevate the offense, because last night was not a picture-perfect situation around him, and he came nowhere clear to elevating any of his teammates.
And I'm not sure exactly which quarterbacks in the NFL can elevate this team, albeit there are some teams going to the playoffs, or at least in position to go to the playoffs, that have worse weapons than San Francisco currently has on the roster playing for them. But you mentioned you're kind of not out on, but you're worried about Brock's physical limitations. Well, I'll tell you this, Mark. What concerns me the most is that, okay, we know Brock isn't the biggest, strongest guy, doesn't have the biggest arm, but he can do those things well enough to have success in the NFL. But it's when the decision-making becomes poor. Mm. Whether it's he's forcing plays, whether he's trying too hard, whether the offensive line's bad or the receivers aren't getting open, when the decision-making becomes an issue. It was against the Cardinals early in the year. It's been an issue in this game. That's when it's like, okay, what do you have to offer? If you don't have the arm, you don't have the legs, you don't have, you know, this ability to go out there and just beat teams with your physical presence alone, if your intellect and your decision-making is gone, that's what made Brock Purdy so great. It was the ability to know when to make the throw, when to pull the ball down. And when that goes away, it's not to say Brock's a bad quarterback, but you saw last night, he is not the same player he was, and not a player that's going to make a record-breaking contract, not a player that I think most teams would want to give a contract to. Like, if Brock Purdy hit free agency after this year, I don't know how many suitors he would have. And if you want to give a quarterback that big of a contract, and not many other teams want him, that has to worry you, right? Of like, oh, like, are we making the right decision here? And look, Brock has shown us the previous 2 years that he can do this, and he can do it well. But this year, I think, has been somewhat of a referendum on his career thus far. Is this the outlier, or is this who you actually are when the going gets tough, when you don't have it your way, like BK wants you to have every single week?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and like there's also, like, I think larger, maybe it's offense wide issues, and this might just be a Shanahan thing. So let me read this stat to you, and this comes courtesy of Josh Dubow of the Associated Press. 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy, when he's down anywhere between 1 to 8 points, so essentially a one possession game, but you're trailing in the fourth quarter in the regular season and playoffs. His passing numbers: 33 completions on 60 attempts, that's just barely over 50% completion percentage, 402 yards, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, with a passer rating of under 60. Again, that's 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions when trailing by a possession in the fourth quarter in his career. Purdy ranks 144th out of 160 quarterbacks that qualify with 50 or more pass attempts in those scenarios since 2000. Like, that is flatly not just not good, but very, very bad. And this is where I'm hesitant to just say this is Brock and, you know, lack of a clutch gene and he just doesn't have it and whatever. This feels like more a large offensive issue and a Kyle Shanahan issue. And one of the first things I thought of when I read that tweet, Sterling, and you probably had the same thought, was it feels an awful lot like the Kyle Shanahan when he's trailing in the fourth quarter stat. Very rarely has a come-from-behind victory in the fourth quarter. And there's just something about this passing offense specifically, Sterling, that when they are in obvious pass situations, when the defense feels like the Niners have to pass, it becomes excruciatingly difficult. There's not a lot of creativity there. Like, the Niners offense has always been so difficult to defend because of deception and because of uncertainty in the mind of every defender on the field. And it's the play action. Get the defense to believe that it's going to be a run. Make every play look the same. Run and pass. And then use the run to establish the passing game. But when you're trailing and the defense can kind of cheat and allow a 4-yard run, but protect for the 20-yard gain over the middle, the Niners don't really have a counter. So this is also where I'm a little confused or conflicted by the conversation we're having about Brock, because it also feels like some of the issues that he is sorting through might be directly related to the way that the Shanahan offense is set up. And if that's not something that is considered and adjusted and changed this offseason, then it obviously there will be differences depending on who the quarterback is. Like, if you have Josh Allen, those numbers would of course be better. He's a better quarterback than Brock Purdy. But this is like an offensive wide issue. The Niners are just simply not as good when they're trailing late than when they're ahead, and some of that is logical, right? Like, and the Niners generally have been ahead a lot in fourth quarter, so it hasn't really bit them a ton. But when they get behind, it is relatively common to see the offense really struggle, and that's what happened again last night in the fourth quarter.
We've often thought that Kyle Shanahan, like, the quarterback is the problem. Once he gets the quarterback that can lift up the offense, things will change. And they tried that with Trey Lance, and now they have Brock Purdy. And, you know, Brock has overwhelmingly been able to make the offense better, I've seen the past two seasons. But there is a common denominator in this team's late-game struggles. And two things can be true at the same time. Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't great late in football games. Brock Purdy is not great late in football games. They make mistakes, they throw picks, and there's levels to Jimmy and Purdy's play. And Purdy's a much better quarterback than Jimmy's ever was, but there's a common denominator that we thought that the opposing defenses wanted to make Shanahan's offense pass the football because of the quarterback. That may be true, but in this case, this year, it certainly feels like the issue all along, the underlying problem, may not be just the quarterback. It's the offense itself. Like, Kyle Shanahan's offense is not a passing offense. It never has been. Like, there's a reason why when Mike Shanahan ran the same system in Denver, it took off once they got Terrell Davis. And look, John Elway's a great Hall of Fame quarterback. Like, they were awesome. They won Super Bowls together out there in Denver. But in San Francisco, they don't have John Elway. They haven't had John Elway. And Purdy's been great the past 2 years, but they don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback on the roster. And when they got their Terrell Davis and Christian McCaffrey last year, you saw what happened. Or 2 years ago, you saw what happened. The offense took off. Everything changed. Everything opened up. When in the why? They could run the football effectively, but there's a further problem happening. And it starts up front. We had a caller, I think his name was Craig, last night on Overtime, say he spent the entire show talking about Deebo Samuel and Devondre Campbell. It's all about the trenches. They're playing in the toilet bowl because they can't figure out the trenches.
He's right.
And you look at the offensive line this year. They can't run the football. Aaron Banks was atrocious last night. Jalen Moore's a backup left tackle filling in for Trent Williams. He's been okay, but that's not your Hall of Fame left tackle.
Yeah.
Jake Brendel's an over-the-hill 33-year-old guy past his prime that really can't block anybody anymore, and you have a right tackle in Colt McKivitz that is just, he's fine.
Yeah, like this offseason, Sterling, you literally need to consider, like, finding a new option at four of your five offensive line spots.
Yeah. It's Trent and Pooney. Those are the only locks. You got left guard, center, and right tackle.
But you got to start planning for life after Trent as well. Like, you need to start figuring out a left tackle, too. Yeah.
Right, and you can see when the offensive line, and this is for every team in the NFL, mind you, when the offensive line isn't great and you don't have a Mahomes or a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow behind them playing quarterback, you're going to lose football games pretty often. But the offensive line in a Shanahan system, it is the lifeblood, it is the heartbeat of the offense. And when that heartbeat starts to fade, it ain't pumping blood out to the hinges and to the arms and the extremities, the offense falls apart. That's what happened this year. The offensive line's terrible. They don't have a quarterback that can be the elite guy you have to have, but he's good enough, but he really isn't the elite guy. He ain't going to pick you up. And you have older veteran players aren't doing their job either. You got to fix the offensive line. Then Brock Purdy gets better. Then Deebo Samuel does his stuff. Like, everything permeates from the offensive line out. They got to get that figured out.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And, I mean, you got to start worrying about the defensive line as well. Although, and we'll talk about this coming up on the other side, the defense looks so much better with Dre Greenlaw Utah back out there, and even telling Noah Hufanga, who's now been back for a couple of weeks. I mean, the defense has had their two best weeks, maybe of the entire season, these last 2 weeks. Don't know exactly what that means for Nick Sorensen. Maybe it's more likely that he returns. But two guys that have had a major impact are two guys that are impending free agents in Talanoa Hufanga and Dre Greenlaw. Maybe the Niners, considering their recent injury history, are able to get a little bit of a discount and they get those two guys back, which they definitely, I think, should push for, because the defense has looked entirely different. And that's not even when you consider that they also need help on the defensive line. If you get some legitimate starters, at least on the interior of the D-line, and you have Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga, you might be able to get this defense back to an era that they were, say, in 2019, when they were one of the best units in the entire NFL. We can talk more about that. We also got to talk about Deebo Samuel and the season that he's had. You got to hear what he said about his drop on a big 3rd and 10 in the second half last night after the game. You got to also hear what George Kittle said that he told Deebo Samuel in the locker room after that loss. We'll get to all that and a whole lot more. It's the Football Hour. Mark Randy, Sterling Bennett with you. We are sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. More on the Niners loss to the Rams coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Back to the Football Hour with Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, welcome back. No Kyle Madsen today. It's Sterling Bennett alongside Mark Randy here on 95.7 The Game. That highlight you just heard, Al Michaels on Amazon Prime. And yeah, it was the Deebo Samuel drop, 3rd and 10. The Niners trying to get in the end zone for what would have been the first touchdown of the game, and it would have turned out to be the only touchdown of the game based on how it played out. It was one of the biggest moments of the game, that and the Brock Purdy interception, probably the two biggest swings of this football game, and both went the way of the Los Angeles Rams, and it's a big reason why the Rams knocked off the Niners yesterday 12-6. Sterling, let me ask you this, and you guys can all chime in on the Comcast Business text line, 888-957-9570. Do you feel like Kyle Shanahan changed, amended, or maybe Brock Purdy's part of this as well? The plan, the way they wanted to attack because of Deebo Samuel's tweets, and if you missed it earlier in the week, Deebo Samuel took to Twitter responding to some of the talk about him struggling and said, "I ain't struggling, I'm just not getting the ball." And then 4 of the Niners' first 9 offensive plays of the game, Sterling, went to Deebo Samuel. Is this just a coincidence? Is this like a subconscious thing, maybe in the back of Brock Purdy's head? Or is this an active decision by Shanahan, Purdy, and the Niners' offense to say, you know what, we're going to get Deebo the ball because of what he tweeted? Because if that's the case, Sterling, that is a disaster. You cannot let a player's actions on social media impact the way you attack a defense.
The outlook, it certainly felt as if they were trying to protect Deebo Samuel's ego. Okay, fine, you want touches here. Here's your touches, we'll give you 4, and then you're not going to get any yards, then we'll move on. Let's prove a point early. But the Niners needed Deebo Samuel last night. They've needed him all year long.
True.
Like, you don't have Christian McCaffrey, you don't have Brandon Ayuk. The next man up that you hope can be the person to carry the offense is Deebo Samuel. I don't think there was this effort to force feed Deebo per se, although it felt that way last night after watching the football game. But I do think Brock Purdy felt that. The way he talked about it, the way that he spoke about Debo's tweets about how I want to get Deebo the ball, I'm going to get Deebo the ball. Like, yeah, that's part of the game plan for sure, but you can tell, like, and maybe it wasn't just a Deebo Samuel thing because Brock was forcing passes a lot last night that he shouldn't have been doing, but you can tell there was this, like, I'm looking for Deebo and only Deebo Samuel at times. And that depends on the read of the play, fine, but leaving the game, the perception was, they are protecting a diva wide receiver's ego. And in the biggest game of the year, when you need him, yes, he has to get the football at times, but when you are the least effective offensive player on the field at all times this year, why? Like, you need him. He's never shown up the last 13 games. Why is he going to show up now? Like the odds it happens are very, very low.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And this is a thought that crossed my mind, not last night while we were on the air, but this morning when I woke up, it was one of the first things I thought of. That's how weird I am. And
dreaming
I also
about Debo.
I just saw it on the Comcast Business text line. Shout out to the 415. What did you make of Kittle's comments after the Buffalo game saying he was open and not targeted? Kind of similar. One, it's Kittle saying it post-game, not tweeting it out like a day after a nice win. Kittle's doing it after one of the worst losses in the Shanahan era. And Kittle also has the backing of being one of the few offensive players who has been pretty good every single game that he's played in. He's obviously had great games and he's had not great games, but he has been one of the few that has shown up consistently week in and week out so far this year. That's what I would say the difference is. It feels, coming from Debo Samuel, Sterling, like sour grapes when, one, he's doing it in the middle of the worst season of his career, and two, he does it after a much-needed dominant win. Kittle did it during the best season of his career after a rough loss. After a rough loss, it's fine to ruffle some feathers and say, you know what, you got to get me the ball. I am the best player on this offense. Get me the ball. Yeah. Debo did it after a win when he hasn't been producing. Those two things to me are entirely different.
It all comes down to, what have you done this season? George Kittle has proven to still be, without Brandon Ayuk and without Christian McCaffrey, able to get open, able to get yak, able to help take this offense to six wins this year. Like, George Kittle at times has been the entire offense. It has been a Purdy and Kittle connection all year long. And I don't know if it's jealousy of Debo. Maybe it is. That can just be me reading into things too much. But the difference is, again, like you said, Kittle did it after a loss.
Yeah.
Team struggling. He's like, hey, I want the ball because I know I can help the team. Okay, well, they didn't need your help to beat Chicago, Debo. That's the difference. They did it fine without you. Now, you want Debo to get involved and be a force in the offense once again, but the fact is, I could argue this Niners offense has been better when Debo Samuel does not touch the football compared to when he does. Like, this year alone, he's averaging minus 1.6 yards over the expectation. That means he is the worst running back in football.
So, in other words to say, it is 1.4 yards under expectation.
Exactly. I get it, Debo, you want to get the football. You are getting the football. That's the problem, man. You're not doing anything with it. You know, you can talk long and hard about the opportunity. There is not a conversation to be had of the lack of opportunity. There's plenty of opportunity. Debo Samuel lives in the land of opportunity, and he wastes it almost every single football game. And to go on Twitter and make it about yourself and then not follow it up, somebody has to hold him accountable. Somebody has to be, whether it's a coach or a player, somebody has to say, hey, brother, stop. Don't shoot your mouth off then not be able to back it up. But maybe that's just who Debo Samuel is now. He's a mouth that really cannot back it up on Sundays.
Here's what Debo Samuel said post-game in the locker room after his drop on 3rd and 10 in the second half was one of the main reasons why the Niners lost 12-6 to the Rams, essentially ending their season. Here's Debo Samuel.
Real, very, very frustrating. Like, end of the day, like, catch that ball. It's nothing there but the end zone. At the end of the day, just got to catch that rock. Like, seeing the moment, came across the middle and see nothing but the end zone. At the end of the day, like, got to look the ball in and go score.
On that drop, your reaction, is that probably the pinnacle of your frustration this season?
I was more frustrated than anything that I even dropped the rock.
George talking to you in the locker room, was he just giving you words of encouragement?
You know, at the end of the day, like, you know, George is George. He came over, he was like, man, I just seen you make that play a million times. Like, don't let it eat you up. But I feel like I made that play, I think we win the game.
And that's the reference of what George Kittle said to him. And you were just talking about maybe he needs someone to tell him like how to handle things. This is what George Kittle, in his own words, said to Debo Samuel after the loss. Here's Kittle.
Basically just said, one, there's things that you just have to take on the chin. Talk to the media, take ownership of whatever you had said before, how you played tonight, take ownership of it, leave in the past, and move on. Because there's better days ahead for Debo. There's plays to be made for Debo. And he has more opportunities ahead of him to make plays for this team. And that's, I believe in Debo. You know, I've had games where I've had drops. I've had games where, you know, I did not play my best game. And people picked me up and allowed me to play at a high level again. And I love Debo. And he, while it was not his night tonight, when he did get the ball in his hands, I thought he fought his ass off to, you know, try to, you know, make plays for us in there. I know he'll be eating himself over that, you know, one drop. But he has plenty of plays ahead.
George Kittle, I mean, as he always does, hits the nail on the head there. There is a decent part of me, though, Sterling, that does feel bad for Debo Samuel because, like, I would want all my players to be on the edge of, like, confident to cocky. Like, you have to be on that edge if you want to
you
be
want that
good.
Ego.
Absolutely. Like, you have to be. If you're not, there's no way you're going to make it in this league especially, but really any professional sports league. You have to think of yourself as, like, the best thing in the world. Otherwise, you might not make it. You might not have the drive and the ability to put in all the work you need to get it done. So there's part of me that respects the way that Debo thinks and says, no, I'm still great and I'm going to come out and prove it. But the difference is you just got to internalize it. You can't put it out there publicly because you don't know how people in the locker room are interpreting that. And everybody has bad moments. I mean, we spent 2 hours of our 3 hours last night talking about Devondre Campbell, who probably just put out there the worst moment of his NFL career, quit on his team mid-game. That's absolutely unacceptable. What Debo did is nowhere near as bad as that, and I'm not trying to say they're the same thing. But in the way Debo Samuel phrased his tweets, you probably leave Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy thinking, "Ooh, is he blaming me?
Yeah, like, is it my fault?
is it my fault that Debo's not having a good season?" And then it leads to what you're talking about, maybe Brock Purdy feeling like he's got to get Debo Samuel the ball more, and while ultimately that responsibility rests on Brock Purdy to do what is best on any given play, that can't be an easy thing for a younger quarterback in Brock Purdy to try to sort through in the moment when you're trying to win a must-win football game.
And Brock hasn't been one to really feed the guy's egos. You heard when he was a rookie coming in telling Trent Williams of all guys, hey, shut up. I'm trying to call a play here. Like, hey, I get the gold jackets on your back. I don't care. I'm the captain now. Like, that's Brock Purdy's mentality. And so I don't know if we can just chalk it up to 2024 being this weird bad juju season. Maybe you can. And honestly, I would not be shocked to watch this team come back next year with Brock and Debo and CMC and Kittle and say, everything's fine, and go on another massive run. Like, I wouldn't put it past them, but just, like, the way Debo has handled this year, every player, whether it's MLB, NBA, NFL, they're going to have a bad game, they're going to have a bad play, they're going to have a bad season. Sometimes players, just for whatever reason, things don't work out that way, but it's how you handle it and how you push through it and how you come out the other side better from it. And you've heard George Kittle talk about, in that clip you played, wear it on the chin. Take it on the chin and move on. There's better days ahead. I'm just not too sure there's so many better days ahead for a player like Debo Samuel. Like, the explosiveness isn't there. The speed's not there. The ability to separate has never been there, but it's worse than it ever has been this season. Like, you play wide receiver. Now, maybe there's a position change for him. I would hate that, but maybe that's the case to prolong his career. I just don't know how you trot out Debo Samuel as your receiver number one next year. Like, hey, lead this offense in receiving yards and touchdowns and hopefully pick us up like he did in 2021 again.
Yeah, that seems very difficult to do. Here's Kyle Shanahan earlier today on his conference call on Debo Samuel's performance, again, specifically on that big drop on 3rd and 10.
I mean, I think it was pretty obvious. You know, Debo did the best of his opportunities, and the best opportunity he had, he didn't look the ball in and got too excited probably trying to score. And he had the same route earlier in the game out of the backfield on a 1st and 10 where he gained about 6 yards. And on this one, they blitzed, so he had a good look and didn't look it in and had a big drop. So that was about it.
And Shanahan obviously not feeling very good, as he shouldn't at this point, but you can hear it in the tone of his voice. I think this Debo conversation, it isn't again, it's kind of on the backdrop of the Devondre Campbell situation. And Devondre Campbell, as far as I'm concerned, is done with every single member of that Niners team. Like, there's no repairing what just happened. That's not what this is for.
So he can't have communion with the team?
He's done, okay?
Yeah.
He's gone. Like, that's not what this is for Deebo Samuel. For Deebo, this is, you had a bad moment. You kind of, like, called your shot, and not only did it not work out, you kind of fell flat on your face. That's not something that you can't recover from in a locker room. In fact, I would say there's nothing really to recover from in the locker room. Like, all of his teammates still love the guy. It's not like, I can't believe you did that. You cost us the game. We're over it. We don't want you around him. Like, that's not what this is. He had a bad moment. Everybody has bad moments, as George Kittle said. But the bigger issue with Deebo Samuel isn't that. It isn't the relationships. It is what you're talking about. What does Deebo Samuel have left in the tank? And I know there's a lot of people out there who still just feel like this is, for whatever reason, a bad season and he's going to bounce back. I frankly don't see it. And I don't know what this guy can give you going forward. And again, it's not a knock on Deebo the person. It's not a knock on any of his relationships. Right. It does not mean that he does not still have so much love from everybody in that locker room. But it's just a question of, and this is where what happened yesterday is so confusing to me, I'm not so sure this is the guy that can help you win football games anymore. And if that is truly the case, and we saw the Niners offense still try to get him the ball relentlessly early in the football game, then that's just a failure of preparation, because you are getting the ball to a player that cannot help you win anymore. And that's a big reason why the offense early in the game, when it was dry, by the way, and your defense was not allowing an inch, it's a reason why you did not build a bigger lead than 3-0, because you were set on giving the ball to a player who has not been effective all season.
Yeah, it is. Watching last night, it felt worse than the previous Niners offensive, I guess you can say, troubles. It was like, what's the excuse? Like, you're playing a bad defense. They gave up 42 points against the Bills last week, and I get it. Bills have Josh Allen, but like, the Rams defense is not good. 186 yards per game allowed on the ground the last 3 weeks. Like, you can't run the football for more than like 50 yards. Why? Now, that's an offensive line issue for sure, but
the rushing attempts, just flat out crazy. You see the total, the disparity? The Rams ran it 38 times. The Niners ran it 19.
And I believe Kyren Williams, who called the Rams the big brother of the rivalry last night, had 29 on the day.
29 for 108.
And he literally pushed the Niners' defensive front 5 yards after getting touched the first time.
Yeah, by the way, 29 for 108, that's 3.7 a carry. Guerrero, 16 for 57, 3.6 a carry. So in terms of a per-carry basis, basically even. The difference was McVay, even though it wasn't working early, stuck with it, and it eventually resulted in a couple of long drives that won the game for the Rams.
Which, funny enough, you know, we talked a lot about in the big game, Super Bowl last year, the one 3-4 years ago now. Oh, why did you stop running the football? And this game's obviously different than those ones, but they had no problem saying, okay, here's extra tight ends, here's my receiver in motion, boom, here is three straight runs to Kyren Williams. And obviously, you know, averages get jaded late in the game because guys get tired on the defense, which is what happened for San Francisco for sure. But even then, like, okay, you just stop trying to run the football. And every time you tried short yardage stuff or screens, your offensive line couldn't get out. Or Grendo and Deebo Samuel could not find the space. And the difference is I can accept Grendo being a fourth-round rookie struggling at times. It's going to happen. It's bound to happen.
Yeah.
That's why you're a rookie. You're going to make the mistakes. Whereas Deebo, it's like, I don't, like, as a fan, I don't want to see him touch the football because I know what's going to happen. The defense, if he's in the backfield, knows what's coming. If he's lined out wide, I know what's coming. Screen pass 1 yard. Screen pass 2 yards. He can't separate. He's not getting the ball deep. Like, I don't want to see Deebo Samuel touch the football in this offense this season. Like, that's how ineffective it's been, and I would never say that in previous years. I'm like, hey, feed Deebo. Feed Deebo. And the big question I'm thinking of, and it's kind of one I think we kind of hit on a lot tonight, is Father Time. Like, has Father Time come to Deebo Samuel's door and is knocking? I don't think that's out of the question. He's almost 30 years old. He'll be 29 next year. He plays so physical. The way he plays as a running back, as a receiver, the body bruises, the injuries he's had. You just can't withstand that for a decade. It's been nearly 8 years of Deebo Samuel. Like, his body, it may be just done playing football. Like, that has to be a part of the conversation here.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, specifically, well, what? He was a rookie in 2019, the year they went to the Super Bowl the first time. So, yeah, I mean, and 6 years of Deebo Samuel is probably more like 8 years for anybody else because of all the, like, for wide receivers, for all the extra hits that he takes, maybe even more like 9 or 10 years. You're right. Like, and especially the toll that 2021, I'm sure, took on him. And he would go and have a 2021 again, I'm sure, if he was given the choice because he was so incredibly good. But that might have taken a year or two off of his career because of how many times he handled the ball. And not all touches are created equal, right? Like, if you're Tyler Lockett, your one touch is the easiest physical touch you could possibly have because he'll make a catch and then he'll just slide down and he'll never get hit. Your one touch for Deebo Samuel running between the tackles, you get tackled by four different dudes. And what someone on our Comcast Business text line pointed out earlier today, there's still defenders swarming around Deebo every single time he touches the ball, because whether or not the ability is still actually there or not, the fear of defenses is still there, and they are not going to tackle them with just one. They're not going to try to wrap him up by the legs. They're going to try to lay him out and hit him hard and double up on him, triple up, quadruple, four guys tackle him at once. Like, that is still the way that defenses treat Deebo Samuel. So there is, an added for every single hit on Deebo that you don't have for a number of other players. Before we do get on out of here, Sterling, we have a few minutes left. I did want to spend a couple of moments on the defense because the defense was so good last night. And even with the loss, just seeing Dre Greenlaw return to the field, it made my heart so happy seeing what it meant to him as well. I mean, he was quoted post-game essentially saying, I mean, I just love hitting people. It makes me feel better, which is just the most football answer ever. But it's just so good to see how happy he was to return. And by the way, Shanahan said earlier today that what kept him out for the majority of the second half, calf, weird tightness, fatigue, and a knee issue, checked out okay, and he's day-to-day. Great news there. But seeing Hufanga back last week, seeing Greenlaw back this week, and seeing how good the defense played, it speaks a lot, I think, for how much the unit missed those two, and specifically Dre Greenlaw, and how maybe more bright the future is for the defensive unit, specifically if they can get Dre Greenlaw back under contract again for next year.
There's been very few bright spots, silver linings of this year. Juwan Jennings has been one for sure. George Kittle definitely one. At times, Jordan Mason, Dominic Pooney, this rookie class has been one. But overall, it's been a very down season, disappointing, mismanaged, whatever word you want to use, drawing back to last night's conversation on overtime. Getting Dre Greenlaw back felt like the most promising of the silver linings of, okay, with him on the field, the entire team plays different. Now, obviously, guys are healthier maybe than they were a couple weeks ago or whatnot, and they're feeling pretty good coming off a win against the Bears, and they know the Rams offense pretty well, and it's raining, so who knows how much all those things played a factor, but you get Dre Greenlaw back on your team, on your defense, his energy, his enthusiasm, his psychopathic nature of wanting to just hit somebody as hard as he can, even if it's his own teammates at times. He just wants to go crazy and berserk.
Yeah, he'll commit a personal foul every once in a while.
Yeah, and you'll say, why? But also, that was awesome at the same time. Yeah. Like, that, it's infectious. And I think watching last night, for all the troubles this year has caused, watching the defense give up 12 points against an offense that the Rams had 44 points on the board against the Bills a week ago, like, that to me gives me hope that 2025 on defense at least can be better. The offense still has questions for sure, but you bring back Dre Greenlaw, which I think they will, and Talon Hufanga, which I don't know how you watch how the defense played last night and said, eh, we'll let those guys hit the open market when the year is over with. Like, they felt like must resigns after one game together. Again, it was like, yep, those guys are back. Lock it up now. But I am oddly excited now for 2025. I cannot wait to hopefully to show Kyren Williams who the big brother actually is in rivalry once again.
Yeah, the Hufanga conversation is interesting because I feel like even last year, once he went down with the injury, and he was not having a very good season even before the injury, and then you saw Jair Brown as a rookie step in and play pretty well. You felt like, all right, this is probably the end of Hufanga. But then Jair Brown has taken a major step back this year, or at least hasn't stepped forward at all, and Hufanga's since returned and played really well in two games. I think the script has kind of flipped entirely on Hufanga and his potential future. A big part of it is going to be, of course, what the market is for both these guys. I think if they had to prioritize one, they should probably prioritize Dre Greenlaw, but a big part of the Hufanga question is, I mean, what do you have behind him? You have Mustafa at one safety spot, and then you got no one you're really super confident in other than maybe Talanoa Hufanga. But it might be dictated by what the market says for both those guys. The wild card in all this, Sterling, as we get on out of here, it is the Brock Purdy contract. Because if you save $20 million a year on what you were maybe expecting to pay, you might be able to keep both those guys, and maybe you're thinking you can only keep one.
Last night we saw what this defense looks like when it has 11 NFL starting caliber players.
Yeah,
they haven't had that all year.
Yeah,
you saw what they can do when they have 11 guys that are actually starting level players. It's a massive difference, and I don't think this team, if they want to pay Brock Purdy, can afford to let the defense falter. That is a massive thing. If your quarterback's not going to pick you up, you got to have the defense in place.
Yep, I'm with you. That's all the time we got today, Sterling. Enjoy the weekend off as the Niners played on Thursday Night Football, and we'll catch up with you for overtime. Niners and Dolphins from Miami in, 10 days from now? I'm looking forward to it.
I'll be clinging to that 0.1% chance San Francisco can make the playoff, Mark. Clinging to it with my life.
Yeah, me too. I guess 9 days from now. Sunday, 9 days from now, not 10 days from now. So I'm looking forward to that.
You messed it up, man.
I was thinking it was still Thursday, but it's Friday. Oh. So 9 days from now,
we got
overtime.
That loss is in the past.
It is in the past. I wish I could forget it entirely, but unfortunately, that's not the way it works. Okay, for Sterling Bennett, my name is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday for a lot more on the Niners. I am sure we got Warriors basketball coming up on Sunday as well. But for Sterling Bennett, I'm Mark Randy. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk later on 95.7 The Game.